For the National Association of Shortwave Broadcasters, I'm Keith Parent in Taipei, Taiwan. My very first job on shortwave radio was around 19 years ago, when I did some summer replacement work for Radio Canada International's English language service to Asia. During that time, I've seen so many changes, but not always for the best. Since around 1991, all of us have seen shortwave broadcasters drop frequencies, cut back on programming, and reduce broadcast hours. The question that many of us who work in the medium and listen to it is this the right way to go? Yes, it's true that since the internet took off, broadcasters such as the BBC, Deutsche Welle, Radio Netherlands, and others now have another means of distributing their programs and can reach a different audience that normally would not listen on shortwave. But to cut off an audience of hundreds of thousands, I would even go as far to say millions of people who have shortwave radios and listen on a regular basis is very short-sighted. Myself, like many others, are asking why, and what's going on? I think we need to examine when this all started happening. In the early 1990s, just after the collapse of communism in Europe, stations started to think how to get listeners to listen. This is around the same time that many managers of shortwave stations, like the ones I mentioned earlier ago, started to retire. The new generation of managers, and I should state not all, are just that, managers. Many of them know nothing or little about radio, let alone shortwave radio, to be able to create programs for an international audience that wants to make people tune in. It's almost like when lawyers and accountants took over the music industry. Many of the new generation of station managers think that by switching off shortwave and relying on internet and satellite is the way to go. A few years ago, I attended a radio conference and the director of a well-known radio station, sorry, I won't mention any names, said that shortwave is dead. During the question and answer period of his speech, I had a number of questions I wanted to shoot off. My first question was, have you ever listened to shortwave or do you even own a shortwave radio? His answer was, no. And he's running a shortwave station? My second question is, how do you know people don't listen to shortwave? Well, this is when I couldn't believe my ears. He said that recently he and a number of other directors from radio blah 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 went to the United States, Canada, Australia, and some countries in Africa and found that no one listened to shortwave, let alone radio. This led me to a third question. Where exactly did you go? He replied, New York, Boston, Los Angeles, Brisbane, etc., etc. That's when I and a few others in the room started to giggle. Then I said, wait a minute, did you go anywhere without a 4- or 5-star hotel? Did you go anywhere in the US or Canada, which is not a big city? He said, no. He then added they could get a much larger audience by having programs relayed on FM and AM stations. My reply to him was, well, that's great, but when do your programs air? This is when he seemed a little bit shocked, as I was well prepared. I started to list off some relays. I said, your station, radio blah 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 blah, is in Canada on the CBC. That's the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. Would you like to know the time? 4 a.m. I said, you know, Radio Sweden is also on the CBC. At 2:30 in the morning. Oh, your program is on National Public Radio in Burlington, Vermont at 5:30 in the morning. In Seattle, Washington, it's Sundays at 11 p.m. I went on and on and on. I said, domestic relays are good, but you have no control when the stations will put them on the air. Whereas before, people can listen on a number of frequencies at almost any time. And you're bringing in a new audience? Who exactly? Well, it was at this point he said he needed to run to another appointment. Another point is content. In the last 15 years or so, it seems that all shortwave stations do is news and more news and news and news and news. And I say trying to become like a mini BBC or Voice of America. After a while, if you tune in, you will find that the majority of news put out by small to medium-sized international broadcasters is all the same. If you want to find out what's going on in my corner of the world, I tune to the BBC. Why would I listen to radio blah 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 for an hour to hear exactly the same thing? But if I tune into stations like Radio France International, Deutsche Welle, Radio Netherlands, or Radio Canada International, I want to hear something different. Like a good program, let's say, about music or culture or something silly. I strongly believe that if shortwave wants to catch an audience, stations need to do something different. People at one time, and still do today, tune in for interesting content, interesting personalities. But now it's nothing more than a generic McDonald's for the ears. No wonder people don't tune in as much. My next point is budget. Yes, we've seen the budgets at stations cut, but maybe it's time not to cut back on programming, but rather look at the way you do programs. Radio Canada International, which has had severe cutbacks since the early 1990s, is a good case in point. RCI, like many other international broadcasters, have so much overhead, it's not funny. At RCI, you have in-studio technicians. What luxury! In almost every station that I've worked at as an announcer-producer, you do your own technical work. And now with the new studio technology, it's even easier than it was, let's say, 10 years ago when tape and LPs were still widely used. When I was at China Radio International, I produced and presented a daily 30-minute current affairs program called Real Time China. How many people do you think helped me? Zero. I would set up interviews, research, write, edit and transmit the program to Master Control for broadcast to North America and Europe. But yet stations like RCI and others have so many people that do the job for the producers and the presenters. I mean, really, what luxury? So when cuts are made, where is it? First programming, then frequencies, and finally third staff. And then what do you have? Programs that no one hears or let alone listens to. Something that many programmers and managers don't think about is how important shortwave is to a region like North America. Do any of them know how many people tuned in during the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina? From what I've been able to find out, shortwave was the only way to hear news, as many of the local stations either had no power or had their transmitter sites knocked off air from damage. During the 2005 tsunami, which devastated Indonesia, Sri Lanka, India, Thailand, Maldives, with almost 300,000 people killed, shortwave was the only way to send and receive information. In 2006, an earthquake off the coast of Taiwan damaged an underwater fiber optic cable, which made internet traffic come to a snail's pace. I remember for almost 2 months trying to listen to online audio, but it was almost impossible. But guess what? My radio worked. During the earthquake in China in 2008 that killed nearly 70,000 people in Sichuan province, shortwave was the only way to keep local people informed and to inform relief workers who were in the region. I could continue to give more examples. Now, let's move to China for a moment. Some stations feel that maybe shortwave to the People's Republic is not a good idea because of the amount of jamming done by Chinese authorities with Firedrake. Now, we've all heard Firedrake at some point or another. This is just plain silly. I lived in Beijing for over 8 years and never had a problem to tune in. Yes, it's true that frequencies directed to China were jammed, but all I had to do was tune to a frequency for, let's say, Africa or Eastern Europe, and I had no problem to listen. This is the magic of shortwave. You can have a signal beamed, let's say, to Europe or somewhere else in the world, but you can still listen as the signal is just bouncing all over the place. Now, try to listen to online radio in China from, let's say, the VOA. Blocked. Radio Canada International. Blocked. And the station websites that are not blocked from RFI, DW, RN, or Radio Sweden can't be listened to because of the Great Firewall of China, which slows down everything so much that sometimes it could take up to an hour just to download one 30-minute program. So finally, is shortwave dead? No. Station managers and programmers just need to stop thinking of the internet and domestic relay as new toys. If it's not broken, don't fix it. Improve it. My feeling is that over the next 10 years, or hopefully less, the stations people and governments that have cut shortwave will wake up and say, what have we done? Yes, it's true that nowadays there is much more competition than there was 15 years ago with the 300 TV channel universe that's delivered to our homes, or we can just click online and listen to our favorite program, but radio and shortwave is still the most economical. To end, I would like to say to every international broadcaster, produce interesting programs that will make people want to listen on shortwave. Yes, music doesn't sound that great on shortwave, but if you have a good radio personality and an interesting program, people will listen. Promote shortwave as a very economical way to reach millions of people. Investigate ways to improve shortwave's signal instead of just cutting it. And do something to all the loyal shortwave listeners that are now cut off and have no other way to tune in. And bring back respect we all once had. In Taipei, Taiwan, I'm Keith Perron for the National Association of Shortwave Broadcasters.